When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Tonight, fellow conspiracy realist, we are exploring the story of the Boy Scouts. It's an international youth organization originally founded, ostensibly, to teach morality, ethics, and preparedness to young males in the United Kingdom, and then it expanded to the U.S., and now it exists in multiple other countries. Two caveats before we dive in. We have our own individual backgrounds of involvement with scouting to one degree or another, and as such, we may have some biases here. We were just talking off air a little bit about some of our respective backgrounds. I think we got some Weebelos, some former Cub Scouts in the crowd. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm kind of losing track of the, I guess, the hierarchy. But I think I may have been a Cub Scout. Is Weebelo even still a thing? Is that real? I think I threw that term out because I remember seeing it on Leave It to Beaver or something.
No, that's also a real term.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's also a very memorable word. You know?
Yes, it is.
Like when Wachovia was a thing, you know, that was an easy bank to remember because it sounded right, like a sneeze in a foreign language. And Matt, you were a Cub Scout, you were saying, for a time.
Yeah, I was for quite a while. I did a lot of stuff with my dad and with a local troop. It was really good. The levels, by the way, are Tenderfoot. Second class, first class, star, life, and
Eagle.
That's it.
Where's Weebelo fall into it? I'm sorry. I didn't hear Weebelo.
That's when you get down to like the Cub Scouts.
Yeah, scouts who are Cub Scouts in fourth grade have to get Weebelo's like a rank. You get Weebelo and then you get to Arrow of Light, and already we see the nomenclature and jargon common to cultic organizations. Yeah.
This, a little culturally appropriative as well.
Very much so. And we're about to learn about some of that history before we dive into tonight's unfortunate, completely true and ongoing conspiracy. The second caveat: tonight's episode contains depictions and descriptions of abuse. As such, this may not be suitable for all audiences. Here are the facts. The Boy Scout movement is founded back in Great Britain, street name the United Kingdom, in 1908 by a guy named Robert Stevenson Smith Baden Powell. Baden Powell
would later become Lord Baden-Powell. That's how he's known in scouting in their origin stories. He was a British Army officer and author. In 1908, inspired by a conversation with an American, he wrote a book called Scouting for Boys, a handbook for instruction in good citizenship. I hold in my hand here one of the many iterations or descendants of that, the Boy Scout Handbook.
And for listeners out there, since you can't see, I would describe this as a dog-eared copy, quite worn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been through a lot. It's been to many places. And this guy, Baden-Powell, beat me here, Paul. He's kind of a piece of check out the Behind the Bastards series on him from our good friend Robert Evans. We're not going to go too much into Baden-Powell's history, but we will tell you how the Scouts, the BSA, Boy Scouts of America, particularly came to be. To that point about appropriation, yes, this book and the scouting movement overall was inspired by interactions Baden-Powell had with an artist, illustrator, author named Ernest Thompson Seton, S-E-T-O-N, lest we fall into wordplay. Ernest, by the way, his original name was something like Ernest Evans Thompson, something like that. Anyway, this guy in Connecticut, he had created a similar group called the Woodcraft Indians, a predecessor to Boy Scouts of America. The Woodcraft Indians, spoiler alert, did not include Native American children. It was for the kids of this one town in Connecticut.
Yikes. Yeah. Cobb. Connecticut. Isn't that the whitest sounding town name you've ever heard? I don't know why it hits me that way, but Cobb.
Yeah, it sounds very, I don't know. It sounds kind of made up. It sounds like one of those things Stephen King does in The Dark Tower when he invents his own language.
100%. And, you know, there were some skills, some outdoorsy kind of survivalist kind of skills for foraging and finding water and, you know, things that you would need out in the wilderness. And also, I believe a little bit of woodworking, carving, things like that, right?
Yeah.
Whittling.
Well, yeah, it's survival skills, right? I mean, we're talking about early 1900s. And at the time, identity for specifically males often went back to or was associated with these kinds of skills, these kinds of self-determination, right? Being able to accomplish tasks on your own. If you're in trouble, you can get out of it. If someone else is in trouble, you can provide aid for that person, right?
And I think self-reliance.
Yeah. I think so. This organization goes back to a lot of those fundamentals.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And those fundamentals, those skills remain valuable today. And they can make a difference between life and death. If you find yourself in the wild, one of my favorite examples, which I mentioned on air in the past is, I had a tremendously wonderful, very strange, eccentric scoutmaster. My scout troop was all ex-military, law enforcement, and one of the first things that they told us, they said, "Okay, you wake up, you find yourself lost in the woods. You don't have anything but what you have on you now. What's the first thing you do?" And we had all these answers, right? Like build a shelter, try to build a fire, try to orient ourselves, you know, figure out where north, south, closest civilization is, find water, of course. And he said, "No, idiots. The first thing you ask yourself is, what did you do wrong to end up in the woods like this?" And that's a pretty hardcore question to ask some 11-year-olds. But yeah, they were about
you
that
mean,
life.
You mean, why is God punishing me like this?
Right,
like,
exactly. Okay. And this Woodcraft Indians thing, this movement that Seton makes, it's a bit of a different vibe from the Scouts, partially because it becomes co-ed, but also because it advertised itself as, while it was oriented toward children, it was open to, quote, children between the ages of 4 and 94. So anybody in this town, in this neighborhood of Greenwich, could come hang out.
It's like Legos. They're for everybody, you know?
But if you're 95, f*** you.
Get out of here, Grandpa.
So this, say the 93-year-olds, right?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So this guy, he meets Baden Powell over in the United Kingdom, and their conversations later, he gives Powell one of his books, and their conversations inspire Baden Powell to create the Scout movement, to write his book. And Satan, for a time, merges the two organizations, Woodcraft Indians, Scouting. They merged to create the Boy Scouts of America. Satan actually, I think they had a falling out later, but Satan wrote the first Boy Scouts of America handbook, the early version of this copy I held up earlier. The Woodcraft thread, though, you guys, it's fascinating because I was digging some more into it. Once you get to the like more adult side, the grown-up side, it gets into esoteric magic and neo-paganism.
Like directly?
Yeah. The Red Lodge.
And what is that?
Well, that's some Twin Peaks stuff, right?
Right.
It feels like it. For sure. You mentioned, Ben, I think maybe it was off mic, just that some of your scout training felt a little on the militaristic side. And it is interesting that some of the early ideas for this kind of training and these type of skills and the merging that you just mentioned did come from like drills for training cavalry soldiers, right? Like it's an interesting component that I was not personally aware of.
Yeah. And that logic makes sense for LBP, Baden Powell, because this guy, like mentioned, he used to train cavalry in his time as a British military officer. And one of the big components of training those guys was the woodcraft, forest craft, the survival skills, right? This book takes off in the militaristic environment of Great Britain at the time because the boys want to be heroes, right? The little kids want to grow up and fight for God and country and so on. And that's a tendency that continues to some degree in the modern day. So Baden Powell says, all right, I've got this idea where I can teach these kids skills they will need later when they inevitably join the army, because it's just a given that they will, unless they have some sort of physical or moral failing.
Well, but it's also very strange because the U.S. has no compulsory military service, right? You don't have to go to the military at all in this country, unless you get drafted during a time of war when a draft gets instituted, right? So during like the Vietnam War, you know, as you got into a world war, was there a World War II draft, right?
There were it's interesting with the world wars, both in the United Kingdom and in the US, because even if there was not a draft, or even if a draft did not imply to you conscription, it was considered a deep moral failing to not contribute to the larger effort. And so,
well, I guess what I mean is if you didn't join the ROTC, right, or some other youth organization where you're going to be prepared for battle or to learn those skills that you would learn in one of these other organizations, you're not going to know that stuff unless you've got, you know, family, like a family friend or a father or somebody who is teaching you that stuff one-on-one. So the BSA and, you know, these other organizations we're talking about right here, it's almost a stand-in for exactly what you're talking about, Ben, the preparation prior to either military service or the need to fight or, you know, help people during a time of conflict.
Yeah, and to answer your question directly, yeah, the U.S. did have military conscription during World War II. The most recent military conscription from the U.S. was, of course, as we remember, the Vietnam War. That hasn't occurred since. And one of the reasons that, well, one of the hot take reasons that the draft has not occurred after that is, in some degree, it's due to accelerating economic inequality, which makes the military increasingly the only viable option for a lot of American citizens.
Precisely. I think it's worth noting in many of the successful democracies across the world, children, as they become adults, are required to join some kind of military training and, you know, become certified in a bunch of different levels before they get to become adults, basically.
And I'm not against it. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not against compulsory service. I would extend that I mean, in theory, I'm not opposed to it. I would extend that to say, if you are a member of Congress, if you are a political leader, a member of parliament or whatever, and you vote for a war, you should have to go too.
Yeah, no doubt. Something was bouncing around in my head when you were talking about this, the selective service. That is the closest. That is basically a database that the government keeps here in the U.S. of names of quote unquote able-bodied, you know, humans that could be called up were a draft to be reinstated.
So the old SS.
I just remember, and I looked it up, if you don't register with it, it's a felony punishable by fines of up to $250,000 and or 5 years in prison. I just remember that in high school, that you had to like register for the selective service.
Yeah, it gets kind of spooky real quick. But the so Baden-Powell has this, the way he thinks through this stuff seems like he doesn't necessarily understand children, because maybe he just thinks of the people who are under his command as somewhat childlike. His idea is like, naturally, the children will organize themselves into small subgroups. I imagine 6 or 7, and they shall choose a leader. The boy will be the patrol leader, and they will train in tracking and reconnaissance. And
they will pass the conch shell around.
That's exactly.
Yeah. There shall be no Lord of the Flies, right? Like, he's clearly underestimating the inherent savagery of human beings.
Yes, dude.
Because, you know, I don't know. People are crabs in a bucket.
Oh, I like that.
It's true. I mean, okay, so we can already see the premise here is ideological. It is militaristic. And there is a logic to it. There's a strong argument that Baden-Powell is ultimately, he sees himself as saving time for future military commanders. It's kind of like how you see English teachers in college saying, I wish these kids had been taught the fundamentals of language and syntax and grammar before they came to my class. So he's thinking, if these kids grow up already knowing these basic survival traits, once they enter the military, which again, they inevitably will, then they'll be that much more capable, that much more quickly. That's the origin story. It's brief, it's high level, a lot of it's accurate, but it doesn't tell the whole truth, because if we fast forward through the origin of scouting through the decades to the modern day, we see the Boy Scouts of America becomes a runaway success. It's one of the largest youth organizations in the country. It, as recently as 2017, it had 2.3 million kids, almost a million, like 900,000 something adult volunteers. And if you are doubtlessly, some of our fellow conspiracy realists listening now, you have been in scouting, so you understand that it doesn't necessarily end when people age out. Whether or not you get, or when you get the Eagle Scout rank, then you can continue on to other related things, Explorers Club, Order of the Arrow, etc.
Didn't that Baden-Powell character form a training camp or something?
He did, to practice his ideas, to make sure it would work. He set up what you could call the first Boy Scout summer camp. And he said, okay, it was on an island, Brown Sea Island. And
the most British sounding place I think I've ever heard of, by the way. If Cos Cob is the whitest sounding, this is the most British.
Well, guys, I want to just quickly go beyond what the skills are taught in Boy Scouting, because I think it's more than skills, like actual physical things. I think it is mental training. At least that's what it was for me. It was when I was in Boy Scouts, I remember it was like, it reminded me a lot of the martial arts training that I was taking, again, as a child. It was about discipline. It was about how to act around other people, how to think about other people, how to treat other people, right? It was almost a mindset training system.
Indoctrination,
but at the same time, it was indoctrination, I guess, but I hold dear the things that I learned in Boy Scouting about how to treat other people and how to, I wanted, just really quickly, I was watching this documentary that we're going to talk about in a minute, but it had a clip of George H.W. Bush speaking to, I guess it was a large it was probably one of the National Boy Scout events that occurred back the in Jamboree. Probably the early 90s.
Yeah,
it's probably a Jamboree. It's exactly right. I'm just going to read this quote because it reverberated with me so much listening to him say it on my tiny little iPhone screen that I got emotional because I remember hearing this, right? It's like I remember these things being told to me kind of over and over again. This is what you are. This is how you should be. This is how Boy Scouts are. This is how we are. I'm just going to read really quickly. Quote, your scout law commands you to be trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.
And this, like, is like golden rule type stuff. It's got a, it smacks of almost like a religion. It's,
I mean,
very
that's
interesting.
The recitation of the scout oath code stuff you have to say all the time, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, I guess it's what you're saying, Ben, like being indoctrinated, but at the same time,
but it's good.
It feels good.
Those are all,
yeah.
Those are all good things. This is a good idea. I mean, I inherently don't have any problem with any of this,
but
as
in
it
there,
stands.
But in there, the words obedient, right, are in there.
That's
and
true.
Reverent, helpful, courteous. I don't know. There, some of it, as we get into the story, like I start to see the cracks in the vision I had of it, right?
The language of submitting to authority.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's part of it. Yes. you can be physically self-reliant, but you must consider yourself a morally and ideologically reliant upon a hierarchical organization. So that's the truth of it. And, you know, for decades, this organization was plagued by rumors of physical and sexual abuse. In full transparency, probably due to the unique and somewhat militaristic nature of the organization I was part of, physical abuse was not uncommon, or what would be called physical abuse today. What's more, the survivors of different troops and survivors of time in the BSA alleged for years and years and years that the Boy Scouts of America was aware of a huge ongoing intergenerational problem with abuse. And yes, folks, the worst kind, the kind you're thinking of. And further, that the Boy Scouts of America conspired successfully to cover it all up. What do we make of this? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsors.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. These allegations, both of abuse and of conspiracy, are true. They are inarguably true. They are a fact. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy.
Which is crazy considering that it was almost like, I mean, not almost. I just remember growing up and just hearing off-color jokes, really tasteless jokes about like Boy Scout troop leaders, you know, molesting children. Like, ha ha, it's something creepy about a grown adult men being in command of all these young boys.
See, you know? Also youth pastors. Yeah.
100%. And you know, priests. And we're going to see this. There's some pretty striking parallels there in terms of, like, you know, abuse by figures of authority and absolute betrayal of trust.
Mm-hmm. And in recent decades, multiple individual cases of abuse have reached U.S. courts. The vast majority of these allegations of abuse involved abuse of a sexual nature. More so, what I'm saying is more so than just smacking kids upside the head, sexually abusing them. In 1988, the organization had already attempted to respond to some of this. They created something called the Youth Protection Program to address this systemic issue. And if you look at the Youth Protection Program, you can learn a lot about this online. You'll see that it had some basic rules. So in scouting, there's always this thing with exploring the wild called the buddy system, right? Summer camps, non-scouting summer camps, do this as well. You always want to have someone with you. So the youth leadership program creates some requirements. They have a buddy system for leadership. They say, okay, no one-on-one adult-child stuff. You have to have a minimum of two adults present during all activities. It can be a parent, it can be an adult leader, but there have to be two adults. No one-on-one contact. You have to respect privacy of youth members, you know, taking showers, changing clothing, stuff like that. You can only intrude if there's a threat to health or safety. Separate accommodations. You know what I mean? The adults are sleeping in a different tent, a different camp, a different cabin. You have to prepare for high adventure activities. So make sure all the kids have, you know, the stuff they need to not die rock climbing. That's pretty basic. Why wasn't that a rule earlier? No secret organizations. That's a really interesting one. They said you can't, basically, it's kind of like squirreling in Scientology. You can't create a splinter faction. Because that could aid and abet you in the commission of evil, evil things. And it goes on, but you know, one thing they don't have in there, guys, they don't have something about not allowing previously convicted sex offenders into the organization. They missed that one.
Well, yeah, because theoretically this is after someone has been vetted to become a scout leader or a volunteer even, right? To be an adult person there, even if it is the parent of one of the adults, right? During that two deep leadership, it's like it's a scout leader and another scout leader or another parent of one of the kids that's there. So theoretically, anybody that can go on a scouting trip as an adult supervisor, you'd think would be trained, right? But this thing, this youth protection program comes out, what, I don't even know, 60, 80 years after Boy Scouts of America is formed.
Yeah. More than half a century. Yeah.
It's like, okay, so don't have one-on-one contact with kids and make sure there are at least two adults there. Huh. I wonder why that is after 80 years that this thing gets created.
And then also, why is it created in reaction to, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a reactive. It's a reactive declaration. Fast forward, you know, just a few years later. This stuff, by the way, spoiler, didn't work. We'll talk about it in a minute. But in 1991, the Washington Times, particularly lead investigative journalist Patrick Boyle, they publish a major multi-part investigation into sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts of America. You can read this online. It's called Scouts Honor. They spent 2 years looking into everything they could find. They looked into personnel records from the Boy Scouts themselves, internal documents that were purposely kept from the public, court records from 20 states, probably more, newspaper articles, hundreds of interviews, including convicted child abusers, families of victims, victims themselves, scout leaders, etc. And they even narrowed their scope. The scope of this investigation is only cases of male scout leaders abusing Boy Scouts prior to the 1988 introduction of the Youth Protection Program. And in summation, in the report, they wrote the following. This is going to be very difficult for a lot of us to hear. Quote, the Boy Scouts are a magnet for men who want to have sexual relations with children. Pedophiles join the Scouts for a simple reason. It's where the boys are.
Jesus Christ. Yes.
This guy, Michael Johnson, that we're going to talk about in just a moment, who worked with the Boy Scouts of America for quite a while as, you know, someone trying to protect kids. He said, quote, Boy Scouts is exceptional in the opportunities that it presents to perpetrators to access children in no to very low supervised situations. That was like the same point, I think, but a similar point. It's because there are not other adults around. And you've got where the boys are, right?
And predators seek opportunities. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Regardless of what specific sort of animal they are, predators are all opportunistic. That's how predation works. And this this documentary we're talking about, Scouts Honor, The Secret Files of the Boy Scouts of America, is available now. You can watch it on Netflix, maybe a couple of other platforms too, R-Matey. Sadly, like you said, Noel, it is difficult not to make comparisons between this ongoing tragedy and the conspiracy of the Catholic Church abuse scandals. The BSA had a history of covering things up, even to the point of allowing knowing sex offenders back into the organization. Just like the priest getting relocated, they might change troops, they might move to a different state, wait a few years, let the heat die down. And this was very easy. This is a very easy environment for these predators to operate in for quite some time, because this was well before the age of the internet. You know what I mean? If you wanted to research someone, you needed help from authorities, or you needed a lot of time, you know, to dedicate to physically going out, hitting the bricks and doing some research. The files that these reporters found date back to the beginning of the Scout movement in England, well before the organization reached American shores. And this is where we want to pull another quote. Patrick Boyle, the lead journalist for the Times investigation, put it this way.
Soon after the Scouts were founded in England in 1908, the Scouts there realized they had a problem, because scouting has always attracted men who were attracted to boys.
Yeah. According to that documentary, the first doctor that was present on the first Boy Scout camping trip, the first official one, had to be removed from the organization because of his interest in the boys that was inappropriate.
And, of course, Baden-Powell himself, turns out some of his highfalutin statements may have also been a cover for unclean interest and things. We know this youth protection plan did not seem to work. Prior to 1994, there were an estimated 2,000 separate reported incidents of abuse. And if you have ever had the misfortune of being familiar with abusive situations in institutions, you know that this unfortunately means that many, many, many other cases likely went unreported or got reported and were squashed. And this problem, this genre of conspiracy, aiding and abetting predators, it's unfortunately not uncommon in youth organizations. Yet, even admitting that problem, the Boy Scouts of America set several historical records in terms of legal proceedings.
So from 1986 to 1991, the Boy Scouts of America and local councils agreed to pay more than $15 million in damages. And according to this investigation from Washington Times, the actual payment is likely a whole lot more. And that's because the BSA sometimes agreed to pay individual damages only if the payments were kept under wraps. Which doesn't, is that a thing you can do? I guess it is.
It's kind of common in these sort of settlements. A confidentiality clause may be required by insurers.
Yeah. Wow.
It happens in companies as well. Outside of child abuse, they might say.
And they admit no wrongdoing, right? Like they admit no wrongdoing, and there's a gag order essentially. Yeah. Of course.
Exactly. Continuing on, in 2010, a jury ordered the BSA to pay $18.5 million to a former scout who was abused in the 1980s. This was the largest punitive damages award to a single person in a child abuse case in the entirety of U.S. history up to that point.
Let's talk about a little bit about how in the heck does an individual who ends up abusing a kid that gets involved, that gets the Boy Scouts of America involved in a lawsuit like that, what happens to that individual person? Like, generally, there are going to be criminal charges against somebody if it actually goes that far, right?
That would be more the case now, but previously there was a statute of limitations in term for abuse cases, as well as for sexual assault cases. And changing those laws has been of tremendous benefit to survivors, and I would argue to American society as a whole. But it still doesn't fix things. And these are just a few data points. It would be an entire series. Beyond even what the Washington Times did to name every single case here, there are countless other incidents, and we're not being hyperbolic. When we say countless, we mean you cannot count them literally, because a lot of these went unreported, or they were reported and then covered up by local authorities, many of whom were in some way affiliated with scouting, because, you know, you're the police chief, right? You know the scoutmaster. Heck, he's a scoutmaster on the weekend. He works for you during the week.
Or you're in like the Elks Club together or something, you know? I mean, especially in these smaller communities, there would be some real cross-pollination, you know,
with
these types of folks.
Power structures can be Venn diagrams, right? Especially in small towns. And so the question then becomes similar to the question posed about the Catholic Church. How did this happen? How did such a large, enormous organization with such a storied history go so far off the rails into the realm of the evil and the unclean? I mean, think about it. Politicians, senators, congressfolk, athletes, astronauts, some of the most prominent members of American society and indeed global society grew up in the Boy Scouts. Congress has had official authority over the organization since 1916, when the Boy Scouts got congressionally chartered. So the most powerful people in the nation, ostensibly, were able to keep an eye on it. Yet Congress never investigated thousands and thousands of claims. And that's just the ones who made it to the attention of Congress. Local municipalities never investigated far, far more claims. You know what? It's similar to, it's got True Detective season one vibes, right? We're not saying murder, but we are saying horrific abuse. And, you know, to your point, Noel, people who all know each other, who hang out in the same back rooms, say, we don't want to make this a problem. It's not necessarily the sense you can get from looking at all the research that has come out is less that the Boy Scouts were, you know, steepling their fingers and saying, yes, let's ruin the lives of children. And it was more like they were saying, we've got a brand. We've got a brand that is profitable, and we need to protect that brand. So let's airbrush some of the inconvenient history. And it seems they miscalculated just how much of that evil history there was. Does that seem off base? I don't want to over dramatize this.
No, I don't think it's possible, frankly. I think the drama of the reality of it is bigger than anything one's imagination could conjure.
Thanks, man. I mean, we should also really thank, again, the folks at the Washington Times and Michael Johnson, who you mentioned earlier, Matt, for speaking out. This guy wrote a letter in 2021. He was the leader of the organization that was supposed to investigate and prevent this stuff. And in 2021, he writes directly to Congress and he says, the Scouts are unsafe for children. Please, please do something.
Yeah, he's literally the guy that's supposed to write the rules. He was hired as a Plano, Texas officer who specifically specialized in child sex abuse. And the Boy Scouts of America brought him in to basically run their youth protection program to hone this whole thing. And they kind of held him back the whole time. And they said, hey, we don't have any kind of, you know, guidelines for how to protect youth or anything like that. Only for him to then to find out that some Boy Scouts of America person did help create the official national youth protection guidelines, like for the United States government, and found out that the person who was part of the Boy Scouts, who was officially cited on that document, was his boss, who told him they don't have any kind of youth protection document. But then his boss goes on to tell him, oh, no, well, they put my name on it because the actual guy who helped write it from the Boy Scouts of America, he got picked up on child sexual abuse materials, right? That stuff. And his name was Douglas Smith, and he ended up going to prison for child sexual abuse materials, right? And there's an article you can read. Here's the title. You can look it up. Boy Scouts executive surrenders in Fort Worth on a child pornography charge.
And Michael Johnson was serving. He was not a spring chicken at this. He had been serving as the youth protection director for a decade, right? And and he was begging Congress to act. Congress left this on red. And the more people investigated, the more unclean things they found. Scout records. This came out in a court case where an abuse survivor, his lawyers were able to have the courts compel the Boy Scouts to share records that had not made it to the public previously. And as people were looking into these records, they discovered something called, alternatively, it's been called the red flag files, the confidential files, or the later it was called the ineligible volunteer files. It had very disturbing details on hundreds of scout leaders banned from the organization and sometimes let back in, banned for sexual misconduct from 1975 through 1984. And then another list came out from the BSA with more than 350 adult males banned for sexual misconduct from 1971 to 1986. They're called the secret files. To be fully transparent here, want to thank the LA Times. They have compiled a searchable database, which is available online for free. You can look state by state, city by city, often, but not always, troop by troop. You will see that the names of the perpetrators are not always present. Sometimes it's like person number, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the scary thing about it is if you were in Scouts and you were not subjected to this abuse, you're probably going to be surprised and chilled by the fact that this database will likely show a scout troop near where you grew up, where something like this happened.
Yeah. That it's that widespread and foundational almost. What's the word? Like when something prevalent? Is like, but even more so, almost like it's, oh God, this culture, this climate, you know what I mean? It's like something that's ubiquitous and within the organization itself, like at the very root of it. It's wild.
And it's mission critical to note, this organization went to pretty extreme lengths to prevent parents, law enforcement, literally any other outside authority from seeing these files. They were under lock and key in the national headquarters because they were bad for business. And that leads us to another disturbing wrinkle of this conspiracy. I propose we pause for a word from our sponsor and return to dive deeper.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. This culture of secrecy and abuse becomes increasingly disturbing. We realized something that I, as an Eagle Scout, was not aware of for quite some time. The Boy Scouts of America actively lobbied against child sexual abuse laws. A youth organization opposed laws protecting children. In 2018, even the House of Representatives wrote in to the Boy Scouts of America and said, "Why are you against this?"
What were they lobbying against?
They were opposed to mandated reporting requirements, a detailed account of safety procedures and reporting mechanisms that they have in place. I'm quoting the letter here from Jackie Speer. And this was sent in 2018. You can read the letter in full. They were basically opposed to Congress looking for what they call a look-back window, a short period of time where victims of child abuse can file suit despite a state statute of limitations.
Wow.
So they were anti-reporting requirements and anti-extension of statute of limitations. And
so essentially, yeah, the scouts are attempting to, or at least it's the allegation here is that the scouts are attempting to shield, like, as an organization, individual abusers. And you have to wonder, why would they do that? And it's probably a PR thing, right? The Boy Scouts doesn't want anybody to think about it as an organization, as the iconography that is the Boy Scouts, as child sexual abusers.
Right, right. There's this idea of protecting the business of the brand. And, you know, it's for a pained cliche analogy, it's like, imagine there's a fox in Congress that is fighting hen house legislation. You know what I mean? Like a fox saying, well, this rule about fences around chicken huts is un-American when you think about it. That's like that ulterior motive is damning. And we have a quote from Michael Serbot, who was the Scouts chief executive at the time. And he said, quote, at no time in our history have we ever knowingly allowed a sexual predator to work with youth. It turned out to be entirely not the case. It would have been more accurate to say at pretty much every time in our history, we have knowingly allowed sexual predators to work with youth.
So, you know, this kind of hushing up of the whole thing, this intergenerational silencing of these abuse victims. I mean, you know, you're right, Ben, the True Detective analogy. Well, it's not murder per se. It is murder of innocence. It is murder of trust, you know, and it is essentially what amounts to a child abuse ring, you know, and with this finally coming out, it impacted the organization, the Boy Scouts of America, significantly. And they actually filed, it took a while. It took a long time for it to really hit home, nearly a decade. In 2020, the BSA finally filed for bankruptcy. And likely, you know, because of a lot of these hush-hush, you know, settlements, right?
Yeah, they were looking at 200-plus pending lawsuits at that time in the federal and district courts of the U.S. with almost 2,000 claimants involved in those already. And then May of that same year, you mentioned, Noel, the U.S. bankruptcy court in Delaware, because, you know, where are you going to headquarters a company if you're shady?
We're in Delaware.
They set a deadline in this settlement. And they said, you have until, if you are a survivor of this abuse, this system of abuse, then you have till November 16th, 2020 to file your claim. And all told, more than 92,000 separate claims were filed with the bankruptcy court by that deadline. This breaks another record for the BSA. It's the single largest instance of child sexual abuse claims in a single organization in United States history. And we know that might sound crazy because you always hear about the Catholic Church scandals, right? The Boy Scout tragedy and scandal eclipsed that. The BSA published an open letter ostensibly encouraging victims of abuse to step forward. The bankruptcy settlement continues today. And, you know, we can say, thankfully, at least the conspiracy is unraveling, but the story is not over, you know, and for people who survive this abuse, it'll never really be over. And Matt, I want to go back to a point that you had made earlier. What were the consequences for these predators? Many of them now have died. They were adults at the time they were abusing children. They have aged. They became elderly, infirm. They passed away, quite possibly continuing to be career predators throughout the rest of their life, and quite possibly never seeing justice for the consequences of their actions.
Oh, absolutely. If you watch that the Scouts Honor documentary on Netflix, you can see a couple examples of people who were brought to justice, but people who were brought to justice after 5, 8, 10 years of getting away with abusing kids through the organization because of the opportunities that were there. Just quickly, just to give an example, this guy named Thomas J. Hacker, who was in Illinois, he was a scoutmaster and he was a deacon at his church. And in February of 1988, he was arrested. He was charged with 5 counts of aggravated criminal sexual assault. Again, these are, at the time, it's against minors, kids. He received over 100 years in prison for what he had done, but he had molested hundreds of boys over 8 years. And when he got caught, when he was interviewed in prison, they said, "Why did you choose the Scouts to do this?" And his quote is literally, quote, "They made it so easy," unquote. That is what he said. And just knowing that, like, who knows how many people are out there? Who knows how many people, even if they're involved in a lawsuit, right, like this, aren't actually going to see justice because there's going to be some kind of settlement at some point and they sign some agreement like you were talking about, Ben, where everybody walks away. Nobody did anything wrong, but here's some money.
I don't think that should be allowed.
No,
that seems crooked to me. That's just like a failing of the legal system where, like, you know, money is more important than justice.
Well, those are also out of court settlements often, right?
You know, I get it. And I guess it's up to the victims to decide whether this restitution is worth, you know, is to them a form of justice. But it just doesn't feel like that to me, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Well, let's talk about over the years, like, why somebody wouldn't get called out for abusing, right? That the power dynamic that we've talked about so often on this show that exists between somebody who's functioning as a scout leader and, let's say, a deacon at their church. And then when a child is accusing this person who is, to everybody else, a leader in their community.
Dude, I think what I'm trying to, I'm not articulating well enough what I'm trying to say about settlements. To me, the problem here is these settlements and the hushing up of all of this legally, I guess, is a pattern. And you think if it happened enough times, they'd be like, I think we're doing a disservice to future potential victims, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say it shouldn't be allowed. And this type of, it's just, God dang.
One would think, yeah, and we'll provide resources toward the end of the show here tonight. In December of 2021, the BSA and their insurer, the BSA Insurance Reserve, agreed to pay $800 million into a survivor fund created to give settlements and financial compensation and hopefully closure to survivors. The very next year, in 2022, the BSA upped the price, agreeing to pay $2.4 billion into the same fund, with payments set to roll out in September of 2023. This year, as we record this, the total estimated settlement appears to round out to about $2.46 billion. 86% of the survivors in the claims approved of this. And just last month, payouts began. Reuters has a good summation of it. The initial payments were sent to 7,000 claimants who, and this kind of bothers me, who chose something called the quick pay option under the BSA bankruptcy plan. These 7,000 folks who chose the quick pay option received $3,500 without going through the lengthier evaluation process that awaits the majority of people who filed claims. So you heard that right, folks. $3,500. That is the price put on the trauma.
Doesn't seem like quite enough.
What is? There's a retired bankruptcy judge named Barbara Hauser, and she and her team are in charge of this process. They say the entire settlement process is going to take years at least. Individual abuse survivors are expected to receive between $3,500 to $2.7 million, depending on how their claims are assessed. And not everyone is happy with this plan, to be clear. There are two separate groups that raised a pretty salient point. They appealed the settlement and they said, look, this prevents churches and organizations that sponsored scouting programs but have not themselves filed for bankruptcy from being being held accountable for some of this. You know, like a lot of, if you've ever been in Boy Scouts, you know, a lot of the troops meet at community centers. They meet in churches, things like that, right? So these groups who are objecting to the settlement are saying they feel that some of these affiliated organizations who may have aided and abetted the conspiracy and abuse are getting off the hook. Because the bankruptcy settlement says you're going to release any claims against alleged partially responsible organizations or organizations that contributed to the Boy Scouts or contributed to the settlement. And sadly, there are a lot of places that appear to have turned a blind eye over the years. It does seem that the stuff they don't want you to know about the Boy Scouts continues in the modern day. And, you know, I think it's also not to sound deferential, but I think it's also important for us to note what we said at the beginning. The heartbreaking thing about this is organizations like this, when done correctly, they can really help kids. You know, I owe a lot of formative experiences and a couple of survival situations, if we're being honest. I owe it to time spent in the Boy Scouts at similar organizations.
Dude, I was just in Cub Scouts for like a year or so, and I made a lifelong friend that I still am very close with to this day. And it was also the first time I'd ever been to the Cracker Barrel. I remember that distinctly. I think that was very much a popular Boy Scout spot during camping trips when you wanted to get away from the nature of it all. But yeah, I think we started off, it was important the way we started off talking about how inherently a lot of these things are a good idea, but then there is that insidious kind of weird, creepy language that you don't even notice right up front, the whole, you know, kind of submissive aspect, you know?
Yeah. Hey, do you guys remember Boys Life or I think Scouts Life or sure, Scout Life, yeah. Something like that? Just mm-hmm. The magazines. Boy Scouts of America would put out all kinds of different publications. Some of them were, you know, more official than others. Some of them were more local. But there were official publications back in the day that would call people out for having inappropriate contact. In the documentary, there's one where you can read an article from a 1920s Boy Scouting magazine that says, the title is Red Flag This Man, and it goes on to describe, hey, here's this person who was a volunteer on this scouting trip. Do not allow this person on your scouting trips. You know, it feels at least back for a time, there was internal reporting before this organization became so huge and such a powerful, moneyed organization.
Mm. And that was, do watch the documentary, folks. That was Scouting Magazine, I think 1923. And the part you see in the documentary about this, it gives you a knowledge of the extent of the problem, because the lead journalist for the Washington Times is reading that article for the first time on air. He was not familiar. There's so much out there.
He finds it while going down the rabbit hole, just of realizing that those ineligible volunteer files / confidential files / you know, the bad, the horrible thing, the red flag list. It's astounding to me, and it's heartbreaking, honestly, because it destroys something that I hold as fundamental to who I think I am.
Mm. And many people can say the same, unfortunately. We want to end on a couple of important points. You know, we have established that these organizations, or the skills learned in these organizations, the moral philosophies learned in these organizations, can be tremendously formative and helpful. We also must know abuse of children can occur in any organization, and conspiracies to cover this up continue in many similar institutions in the modern day. Of course, not every adult volunteer is a villain or a predator. The world would fundamentally not be able to work if that were the case. And if you or someone you know needs help, Please remember, this is perhaps the most important part of this episode. You are not alone. There are resources available. You can call or text in the United States, 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That's 1-800-422-4453. Again, that's 1-800-422-4453. You can also visit childwelfare.gov for more information. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in, Conspiracy Realist. We immensely appreciate your time. We're here. If you have some stories, some insight you would like to shed on this conspiracy, we try to be easy to find online.
We do. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on X, FKA, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, and we've got a phone number. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. If you call in, you've got 3 minutes. You can say whatever you want. Just give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you don't want to do that, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halper. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.